I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday afternoon. In this hour of the program, we are going to be examining Wisconsin's long-term care program that is provided to over 50,000 elderly and disabled persons in our state, and the proposed changes in the 2015 budget. The changes are substantial. There hasn't been much discussion of those changes, and it's unclear what would happen to the programs that are in effect right now and why the changes are necessary. The people who run these programs really weren't informed that there were about to be substantial changes, and so we're trying to understand the reasons for this and how it will affect the 50,000 people in the state who are members of various programs. There was an interesting piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It was an informative front page story on March 6. We draw your attention to that. Guy Bolton writes that the proposal would affect more than $2 billion a year in spending and would replace a system that has been built over several decades with a new model in which the state would contract with large insurance companies to manage both long-term and medical care. He quotes Michael Blumenfeld, who is one of our guests this hour. No one had any inkling that this was happening. We're just scratching our heads. Why would you do this? Michael said this is the most significant change in long-term care in the state for 20 years. Long-term care is provided to, as I said, more than 50,000 elderly or disabled people. It attempts to keep people in their homes instead of nursing homes, and workers come in usually on a daily basis to help with bathing and to help prepare meals. Medical care is provided. In the budget, one organization would oversee both, but that system is not in place yet. And some of this would require federal waivers under the Medicaid program, and all of that has yet to be worked out. The plan is to have this in effect by the year 2017, and a lot of people are wondering what it's all about, and we're going to attempt to make sense of that this hour. We have several guests with us joining our conversation. We did invite the Secretary of Health in the state of Wisconsin, Kitty Rhodes, to be on this program, and received a letter saying that the interview was forwarded. Unfortunately, the secretary has a conflict, so she's unable to do this show. She did send some background information on proposed long-term reforms, so although we would like to have had her with us, we will keep that communication in mind and refer to it during the course of the hour. Michael Blumenfeld is joining us, a spokesperson for the Wisconsin Family Care Association. And Janet Zander is also joining us, advocacy and public policy coordinator at Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources and past director of Aging and Disability Resource Center of Portage County. Later in the hour, we'll speak with a Madison resident who was born with muscular dystrophy. Karen Foxglover will join us and depends on independent caregivers in order for her to live on her own. She has been affected, as many people with disabilities, by transportation problems, and I'm sure we'll cover that. So we have a lot to cover this hour, although some of this is unknown. We're unsure what all these changes would mean for people. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter, which is @KDunnShow. Michael, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Our pleasure to have you. Janet Zander, thank you very much for being with us. Hello.
Oh, you're very welcome, and thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, our pleasure. I hope we can make some sense of all of this. What is amazing about all of this, Michael, and you made mention of that in that Journal Sentinel piece, is this really came as a total shock to everybody.
Yes, it did. We work with a lot of stakeholders in the long-term care system because it really is a system with a lot of moving parts, and we haven't found anybody that had any, as you said, inkling of this. The budget, as you know, was introduced February 3rd and was drafted December, January with this proposal, but there are a lot of efforts with collaboration with the stakeholders, the Family Care Association, and the state. And through meetings all the way through the end of the year, nobody knew or heard that this was on the table.
And I understand there are no meetings to explain all this in the immediate future.
That's correct. There's been something called the Long-Term Care Advisory Council to the Secretary of health services really since family care began in the 90s. And there was supposed to be a meeting this week, and they meet every 2 months. Both those meetings have been canceled. We did see Secretary Rhodes testify in front of Joint Finance Committee the other day, but again, there weren't a lot of details and a lot of unanswered questions.
Do you expect that there are not a lot of details other than turning this over to large insurance companies, because all of this has to be worked out with the federal government to see what kinds of waivers they can get? The explanation from them is that, well, once we are in negotiations with the government, we'll be able to release more details.
Yeah, that is what Secretary Rhodes told Joint Finance when they were asking lots of questions, that they need the approval from the legislature and the governor to start talking to the federal government for their waivers, which, of course, is very unsettling to all of us when there's no details at this point.
Michael, can you explain the system, and Janet, you as well, that we have now? What is the Wisconsin Family Care Association? Why was it considered groundbreaking 20 years ago?
Well, it was 20 years ago. It was December of 1995. Governor Thompson was really ahead of the curve, where he saw Medicaid costs were going up. Looking at the demographics, we had thousands of people on the waiting list, both aging and people with disabilities, and wanted to really take a look at the whole system. So he brought together over 100 of us, different stakeholders, to work on a plan, and that was, Family Care was a result of that. And not to gloss over it, because it took a few years with a lot of input from all these different parties to what would be a good plan for Wisconsin. So Family Care, I think, was in the 1999 budget. It started with five pilots in Fond du Lac County, La Crosse, Portage, Milwaukee, and Richland. And those pilots lasted for 8 years. So we are dismantling a county system, and as I think a lot of your listeners know, we have a very strong county system here for lots of services, and we wanted to be sure we were going in the right direction. And that's really how it started, and after those pilots were successful, we have now expanded to 57 counties. And ironically, just in December, the Joint Finance Committee approved expansion into seven more counties. So by the end of this year, Family Care will be in 64 of the 72 counties in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. And Janet, tell me about the Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources and how all this fits into long-term care, the proposed changes.
Sure. So the Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources is one of three area agencies on aging in the state of Wisconsin. And we work very closely with the county and tribal aging units in the state of Wisconsin. And many of those aging units are serving as aging and disability resource centers. And that's where the long-term care system starts. That's where people go to get the information they need about what options are available, what might best meet their needs, how do they access these programs, what are the eligibility criteria. So that's really where the whole process starts. And as part of the long-term care redesign system that occurred in the late 90s, aging and disability resource centers were first piloted in Wisconsin beginning in late 1998. That model that was created as the one place for people to go for the information and assistance, the options counseling, the enrollment counseling, and all of those pieces became a national model, later rolled out across the country based on what happened here in Wisconsin. So that's our connection, if you will, from our agency is through those aging units and through the service that they provide locally with their strong connection and knowledge about community resources. Very consumer-driven, those aging and disability resource centers have to have boards that represent the populations that they serve, so they're heavily consumer-driven, heavily consumer-delivered, and really have served as a model not only for Wisconsin but for the nation.
And Michael, what are the services that are provided?
Well, Family Care, it's really those basic needs of daily living. It could be coming in to help with some of the bathing, dressing, meal preparation, bringing meals in. The whole concept was trying to keep folks in their home longer. It's a community-based care, which is proven again and again to be what people want, and also saves dollars. So that was the idea with it, and it has been very successful. When you look at the percentages of people that were in the community 10 years ago versus in nursing homes and other settings, those numbers have kind of flipped around with quite a reduction in being successful in keeping people in their home.
Mm-hmm. And Janet, would you like to add to that in terms of the aging population?
I would. But the Aging and Disability Resource Centers see a lot of people both in their homes as well as in the Aging and Disability Resource Centers themselves. And one of the things that strikes us is that about only 20% maybe of the people who come into the centers are actually accessing long-term care at the time. So many of these folks are reaching out early, doing some planning, focusing on prevention. So a lot of what those resource centers do is keep people out of the long-term care system for as long as possible, preserving their own funds and helping them stay independent. And so it's a really critical piece in terms of helping maintain and sustain this system.
Secretary Rhodes, in the letter that she sent to us, and it's not a very lengthy letter, but she said that the member focus of the governor's reform proposal ensures that the total health outcome of individuals in family care is coordinated. She said it will improve the delivery of long-term care services, and the reforms will lead to better health outcomes, improved utilization of long-term care services, and more independence for people in family care living in our communities. She said that the current model is fragmented. They'd like to refocus the program on improved total health outcomes, not just the long-term care services, so the medical care, so this medical care and long-term care would be put together. And I hope I'm reading this right. It would be nice to have representation from health department on this, but that it would be insurance companies, and they would have to be fairly large insurance companies, who would be in charge of both long-term care and health care in all counties, and they stress that's important in the state of Wisconsin, which essentially would mean rewriting all of this, right? Wouldn't those agencies have to contract with all of the service providers in all the different counties, and it would have much more of a kind of a top-down approach rather than the consumer-driven, what do you, are your needs in this county? Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. Right now, she talks about being member-centered, and that is a fundamental principle of this program, that it is member-centered. Also, she's referring to integrated care, which is the family care services and then the acute and primary, so your doctor and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
A little-known fact is that family care does currently include the integrated model as well. So there's family care, and then there's something we call family care partnership. And partnership was actually started in a limited fashion before family care, and it is also a national model that we were really pioneers in that. And that is, again, a member-centered model, but it includes all the care. It includes that acute and primary. And for whatever reason, in the last few years, the state has not maybe been as supportive or as focused on that as they had on the family care program. Partnership is currently in 14 counties, but that is something that we've tested and that we've had, and that's an important aspect of that. But you're right. With the proposal in the budget, they're looking at integrated care statewide, and really the only entity that might be able to do that would be a national insurance company. We currently have 8 managed care organizations that are running the program, and this budget doesn't really appear to envision them being around after 2017 when the budget would take effect.
The coordination of care has already brought down the cost of health care in family care. And, you know, we believe that there are some folks who might well choose an integrated model, those with particularly complex health care needs. But the idea here is that it's a choice, that there are many people for whom that would not be their first choice. Their long-term care needs and their health care needs are very different. And to be forced into a network that would now also then be choosing your health care providers for many older adults in particular, we've been hearing that's not going to be a very popular choice. They want to be able to stay with the doctors that they, in many cases, have seen for, or and clinics that they have been with over a long period of years. So to assume that because someone has long-term care needs, they now also want to have their health care needs managed in that same network is really taking away a big choice and assuming that these needs are very much the same, and they are not.
Because the population is aging and long-term care is something that's becoming more and more important to a lot of people, I guess you naturally have to ask the question, do big insurance companies see that there's money to be made here?
Yes, as Guy Bolton mentioned, you know, we're in the billions of dollars here for this program. So, of course, as they look to grow as businesses, this is could be very attractive to them. But it's one of the concerns and really kind of puzzling to us that we have currently these 8 managed care organizations that really are homegrown, they're regional, that are doing this program, and we don't really have any other statewide examples in Wisconsin. Your listeners may be familiar with Badger Care or SSI Managed Care. Those aren't statewide. What makes us even more kind of nervous about this whole proposal and the idea that this would work in a statewide system, the one service that the state tried was transportation. And just a few years ago, they said we're going to go to a statewide transportation broker system where they'll try to coordinate that one service for the state, and it's been a disaster where they had an outside statewide entity take over the program. They failed. They tried another one, and now in this state budget, they envision going away from that. And that's only one service. So what happens if we dismantle this program we built over 20 years, a national company comes in, and it either doesn't work out or they decide they can't really have the profits they need to survive, and they back out? We have nothing left when they decide to back out. So that's also a real concern.
And our experience tells us that either people don't get service or they end up having service in crisis again, and it falls back to the county level then to figure out how they're going to serve more people in crisis.
What's happening? You mentioned that you weren't completely statewide, and one of their talking points is that it would be statewide for them. What happens to people now who are outside the area of family care?
There's what we call the waiver programs. Now they call it legacy waiver programs. So it's kind of a fee-for-service. There's a waiting list. Like right now, I mentioned the new area in northeast Wisconsin, the 7 counties that the legislature approved in December. The big county, of course, up there is Brown County and Green Bay. There are a lot of people on waiting lists, but they've been receiving services through the kind of the old county system, and there's a transition period where they would transition to family care. So one reason there's been some false starts in terms of going statewide, why it's taken so long, is because there's been questions over time and studies, and you get new administrations and new legislators that have different questions about the cost effectiveness. But the reason we were told and we saw in December that the legislature said we should move ahead with it, because the studies have proven, like several times, that this is a cost-effective quality program. But it has taken a while. But with the additional of 7 counties, 64 total, we're getting very close to statewide. And we could go statewide within the next year or two. Make sure that this is available in all 72 counties. That's really a decision by the legislature, the governor, and the Department of Health Services.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We have a lot of interest in this topic and a lot of emails coming in. We're looking at Wisconsin's long-term care program and the changes to this program, which are very substantial and wide-ranging, that are included in the 2015 budget. The people who provide this care, the family care program, the aging resources, all of those programs were not informed of these changes, nor, according to press reports on this, the staff of the State Division of Long-Term Care was not involved in drafting the proposal and was unaware of it as well. And so there isn't the side represented here where people can talk about what exactly the changes are because, A, nobody knows what they are, and B, all of this has to be negotiated with the federal government to get waivers to change this system and put long-term care and medical care under the auspices of yet-to-be-named insurance companies that would make this statewide. And, of course, the obvious question is what would the effect be on people who use these services? And there are many, over 50,000 in the state of Wisconsin. Here's our phone number. If you would like to join this conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter at K Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour, Janet Zander. She's Advocacy and Public Policy Coordinator at the Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources, and she is the past director of Aging and Disability Resource Center of Portage County. Michael Blumenfeld is spokesperson for the Wisconsin Family Care Association. Tons of phone calls coming in, and we start with Jim in Madison. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jim. Go right ahead, sir.
I think this is a great topic. I'm recently retired from the State Department of Health Services, and I was around when the program was developed. And I think a lot of the things that your guests have brought up is missing from the public explanation for the proposed changes. The system that we have was set up because it really plays on the interplay between local government and where citizens go to get help. And so the aging and disability resources are really the places in local communities where old folks and folks with disabilities can call for help. Additionally, those facilities are places where other than long-term care services are available. Thousands of older people and other folks in communities volunteer to help at those aging and disability resource centers.
Mm-hmm.
The disastrous experience the state had with the Logisticare transportation effort shows that volunteers aren't going to volunteer for some distant company, not to mention an insurance company, but rather they're tied into those local communities. By icing out the long-term care system from the involvement of local government, ADRCs, and local volunteers, it makes it much more of a cold, insurance-like transaction. I don't think any of us are under any illusion of the warmth and good feelings you get from interacting with insurance companies. ADRCs and family care program, on the other hand, are really tied in to local government, and local citizens are involved in the decision-making process. I think that aspect is even heightened by the proposal of the department or the administration to transfer most of the responsibility for the program to the Office of the Commissioner of Insurance, which has absolutely no experience in guaranteeing quality of care for old people. I think in some ways what's most disquieting with this is the administration seems to be placing the greatest emphasis on financial transactions rather than the quality of care it provides to old people and folks with disabilities. It's very disappointing, and I think the kind of double speak that surrounds the transaction and language is really unsupported by a complete lack of assessments or evaluations that points in the direction of changes for this program. It's very disappointing.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks, Jim, very much for your call. Well, and you have to wonder why it is that none of you who have been doing this work for years and years and helped create the programs, nobody was even informed about this. How can you have a discussion about this when even the people who are supposed to be informing you about what the changes are don't exactly know what the changes are? So there's just a cloud of secrecy about all of this.
Well, and the fact that there are a number of independent evaluations, reports, customer satisfaction surveys that talk about how well the current system is working. people are pleased. They're happy with the services they get at the ADRC. They're happy with family care. They're happy with what's happening in IRIS. Study after study after study not only shows that they like the service they're getting, this very local homegrown service, but it is, in fact, also producing the desired results. It is containing costs. The long-term care costs are going down. The percentage of the Medicaid budget that is made up of the long-term care costs is decreasing. We're taking things in the right direction. We're taking people out of more expensive institutional care and helping them stay at home. It's accomplishing all the things it was set out to do. So I think that's why it's such a surprise. If you have something that's working, why would we be making such drastic changes to it? And certainly in a way that's not consistent with the way we've done other things, which is with a lot of stakeholder involvement and piloting of things to see, is this really going to move us in the direction we want to go?
Well, Janet, I don't know if you want to answer this or not, but surely you must have asked yourself that question many, many times. Why would you want to change this system if it's doing all that you just said it is?
I certainly have asked myself that question many times, and I've certainly been asked it many times. And, you know, I don't have that answer. I just know that, you know, in the past we've been asked for these independent evaluations. We've been asked to, you know, study a variety of things, and time and time and time again, we get good and positive results. And so I think the questions need to continue to be asked.
Let's go. Thanks, Jim, for your call. Amanda in Marshfield. Hi, Amanda.
Hi. I am calling as both a former employer of family care, as well as a consumer, granddaughter of someone in family care, and a spouse of someone in family care. And I'm just so utterly upset with the fact that a for-profit organization may be determining who I can have my loved one see as their medical provider. I know that when I was providing case management through the family care system, going into their homes and being able to see their informal supports was so cost effective. I was able to see what sort of resources they had available and help them to see what they had in their community to meet their needs versus automatically authorizing services. I don't understand how we've gone from a state that was so progressive to a state now that is so not. I just utterly am sick to my stomach at what we're doing, and I really cannot believe that this is where we're at. What do you see that we can do to make change? Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Michael?
I think she brings up an important point with the natural supports and the local nature of this. It's not only contributed to the cost savings, but that hands-on approach. The budget envisions the ADRCs going away and having some statewide for-profit entity evaluating folks, and it doesn't sound like we don't know if it'll be in person or not, but to have the person at the ADRC to see, observe, to talk, and to see what those needs are. You know, one example I like to use is one of the outcomes they'd like is they would like to go to church once a week. Well, we could hire a transportation company to pay for that, but not just saving money. Is there someone in that church, and they're local again, they know that church, is there someone there that would like to volunteer to come take that person there and make that connection? So it's not just a cost thing. It's that quality of life as well. To your second point of what could you do, well, like everything that's in the legislature, it means talking to your policymakers, your elected officials, people that you know that are in the program. Folks need to hear from people.
Well, do you even have any idea of who wrote this in the budget, where this came from? It's sort of hard to have this amorphous opponent if you don't know what the background is here. It sounds like we just are in a state of not much information.
That's true, but it's the governor's budget. The governor is proposing this. It's his proposal, and that's what we work from. We've looked at the drafting file. There's the files of requesting certain things be drafted. It just came through a week before Christmas. Seemed to be kind of last minute. We're not sure. Meeting with budget staff and others, DHS. We were told that they looked at other states. California was one example, that they're doing good things out there. Well, we've looked at those other states, and that's really even more kind of puzzling because California has just started to pilot a very limited program in the last couple of years. It doesn't include people with developmental disabilities. It's only a few counties. So we really haven't found a lot of examples, certainly anything successful that's been around as long as our program's been.
And I would add for Amanda, I mean, yes, certainly she needs to, you know, be contacting her elected officials. But what we're hearing from those officials is that what they're hearing is words like cost containment and sustainability, and they don't know, and they want to know, how does this policy really impact my constituents? So tell the story. Help them understand what the implications of this means to her and her family.
Well, let me get your response, and I wish we had her here, somebody from the office, but Secretary Rhodes says, and I'd like your response, these reforms will streamline the administration of the state's program serving people with long-term care needs. So the focus is on the health and long-term care needs of the member, not on the administrative needs of government. Michael, how do you respond to that?
It's an interesting statement because if we start to look at administrative costs, that's one point I want to make. The Family Care Program has the lowest administrative costs of any major long-term care program in the country, hovering around 4.5%. HMOs, according to our own Department of Health Services, their administrative costs are in the 10-15% range. So I'm not quite sure what she's getting at. I think there's some perception that if you had maybe a big national statewide insurance company, there would be maybe less administrative costs, but I don't understand how that would happen.
Let's go next to Dan in Superior. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
Well, I'd like to thank you for taking my call because I want you to know that I was fortunate enough to take care of my mother from 92 until she passed away at 94. And the health care provided by the volunteers and the people that came to the house to allow her to stay in her house, that was her whole dream, to be able to stay in her own home. And those people provided so much help. And I know that they saved money because when she did have an incident and had to go in for some care, it was so expensive compared to, you know, all of a sudden everybody was involved. It cost so much more money. The other part is that it just seems to me that your speakers have been talking to the point that the administration is trying to say, here was, you know, we elected officials saying we're going to have less government, but what they're doing is creating a situation where it looks like it's going to cost more money to give the same wonderful service that the state is, that these volunteers are providing.
Thank you very much for your call. Janet?
I think the bottom line is that, you know, he's absolutely right, that the volunteers are going to be critical and we can't afford to lose them in this system. Home and community-based services are very, very cost effective, and at the end of the day, the question we need to be asking all the time is this good for older people and people with disabilities? I mean, Michael's given you the information about the administrative costs. We've seen and the demonstrated history of what's happened when we've gone with statewide brokers of a single MA service. To think that we could do a better job with all of these MA services and services that are critical and personal to individuals, I think we really need to stop this, think about it, involve some stakeholders in this, and really take a step back and say, at the end of the day, is this really good for the people we're serving?
What's the sense, I'm sure that you've spoken with members of the legislature, what sense are you getting from them as to whether or not there's widespread support for this, or if you may be able to get this eliminated from the budget? Michael?
The initial reaction from most legislators was wondering what's broke. In fact, one senator said to me, if it ain't broke, why do they want to break it? So they're trying to ask those questions too, and they're not getting a lot of answers. And they're concerned because these are their constituents, these are our members, and as you said, Kathleen, over 50,000 people and growing. So they're trying to understand what the proposal is, and I think there is a lot of at least desire to look at something different. If it become, if it'll come out of the budget, it's another question. Technically, it shouldn't be in the budget because there is no dollar amount associated with the proposal. I asked the Department of Administration, the folks that drafted this proposal, that draft the budget for the governor, can you tell me what the costs associated with this proposal are? And there is nothing except for a few million dollars that's associated with some of the expansion that we're already doing. But they also see this as such a big issue that my guess is it'll stay in the budget discussion. But as Janet said, it's so unfortunate because we've spent 20 years working collaboratively with all the different stakeholders in building this system. Family care today does not look like family care 15 years ago, and that's because everybody's worked together in making it a better program. Mm-hmm. And that's lost because you just can't have that kind of process in the budget.
Let's go to Richard in Madison.
Hello?
Hi, Richard. Go right ahead.
I have a very skeptical theory, and that is that with my father, who was living alone in his own house, was served by Meals on Wheels and all that, I have a feeling that this is going to benefit insurance companies and nursing homes. And that's what they're doing. It's to force people out of their house because my sister and I had to sell the house, his house, mm-hmm. to pay for his nursing care.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane.
Michael.
I think that, you're hearing, I think, some of kind of the unfortunate consequences of doing this in the budget process. There's so many unanswered questions and what the true intent is. We don't really have, I guess, time to think about who's behind this, what the intentions are. We have this proposal that we need to work with and hopefully make changes to. But it's when you think about what you both said, the member, the person that's being served, and their family, and what they're thinking right now. We have these seven counties in Northeast Wisconsin expanding over the course of the next few months, this year, and they're asking, what am I signing up for? Is this going to be, are you going to be around in a year? Are these programs, how are they changing? And there's not a lot of good information for those people right now.
No, there is definitely a dearth of information on all of this. We'll continue our conversation. We're talking about proposed long-term care changes. Michael Blumenfeld, spokesperson for the Wisconsin Family Care Association, is with us. Janet Zander is advocacy and public policy coordinator at Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources and past director of Aging and Disability Resource Center of Portage County. And we will also be meeting in just a moment. We're talking about how these programs would affect people. Let's talk with somebody who has a disability and who has services, people who come into her home to bathe her and give her food so she can live on her own. Karen Foxglover will be joining us as well. And we'll take more phone calls. Our lines have been really busy on this, so just be patient. And if you can't get through, we'd love to read your messages on our Facebook page, where you're all welcome to go to it and find out what people are thinking on this. And that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to a Facebook message because we haven't talked about this program very much. My 63-year-old sister-in-law and my 92-year-old mother-in-law are getting assistance from IRIS, IRIS. We hire workers to care for them. How will this affect that program? My severely handicapped sister-in-law goes to an adult daycare center called the Challenge Center. Will this affect that? Michael?
Glad that you read that message. The IRIS program is part of our long-term care system, and it's really important to highlight with folks that we have a long-term care system, which includes the ADRCs that Janet talked about, the family care program, which does include family care and partnership. So you have the family care benefit, then you also have the partnership integrated model, and then you have IRIS, which is a self-directed model, which has currently over 11,000 people on it, and of course, and growing. And that was very important when the program started. The federal government said, family care, that looks good, but we want you to have a choice. You want choices for folks, and actually required the state to figure out a self-directed program like IRIS, which has been very popular. And I think the choices have really served us well, where you have family care partnership, and IRIS. Under the proposal, IRIS is eliminated. The idea is to roll in that self-directed option under the family care umbrella. No one really knows the details or how that would work, because family care actually does have a self-direction option in the program. It's not quite like IRIS. It's in that managed care environment. When Kitty Rhodes testified in front of Joint Finance, she did say that IRIS is not being eliminated. It's being rolled into the family care benefit, but we don't really know. I know what the budget language says, that IRIS is being eliminated, and it does say there'll be self-direction, but we don't know what it'll look like.
Hmm. And there are quite a few. What are the numbers? There are thousands of people on the IRIS program, right?
Yeah, the family care program is over 40,000. IRIS is over, it's around 11,000 right now. So it's quite a few.
And let's introduce to the program as well Karen Foxgrover. Karen is a Madison resident. She was born with muscular dystrophy, and she depends on independent caregivers for her to live on her own and participate as a volunteer in many, many capacities within her community. We thought it important to put a human face behind all of this and find out from somebody with disabilities the kinds of services they need and what her thoughts might be about a proposed state-wide insurance-led program to deal with all that we've been talking about this hour of the program. Karen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Kathleen. I'm really glad to be here and speak up for all of those receiving self-directed care, because I've done self-direction since I moved to Madison. I was doing it before that when I was at the University of Wisconsin at Whitewater, and I've just never known any other way. And the idea of an insurance company directing me feels very, very scary. It feels it's so out of my control. I don't know how people would fight for that.
Mm-hmm. So you have money that is at your disposal, and you use it for what? To hire people to bathe you, to bring food, et cetera?
Well, what I do, I am in the county waiver program, which is not part of IRIS or family care, but regardless, it's similar.
Mm-hmm.
And so I place ads. In fact, I placed 5 ads this week because I'm hiring now for summer. I placed the ad. I've done 2 interviews today for my summer hiring program, and I will be interviewing later this week and tomorrow. And then I train these people. I have them do all the paperwork. I facilitate all of this. I then they go through a process of training that I've created with the help of many volunteers. I have video programs that I've created. And then because no program is fully as full as it could be because of the budget, we do have a small amount of money I use for my day, afternoon, and evening care. People come in, definitely help me get ready for my day, help me with meals, preparation, and stuff like that, and then help me get done with my day. But I'm the agent that hires these people. I am also those that they bring their conflicts to. So I'm not only the supervisor, trainer, personnel manager, I'm the payroll person. I'm all of it.
I see.
On top of being the person they're caring for.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any contact with the agency that's helping you out a little bit, or have you been able to make your views known about proposed changes to long-term care in the state of Wisconsin? And do you feel like you have enough information about how your program would be impacted?
Well, it's very unclear, as Michael has been saying many times. the statute isn't really clear as to what's going to happen. They say, please trust us to do the right thing, and we'll roll out this new program over the next 2 to 3 years, and maybe you'll fit into that model when it comes down the pike. But I don't know if I want to go that route. I don't feel safe to trust this off in the distance kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I mean, I know that I have someone getting me up tomorrow morning. I know I have someone getting me up next week. Do I know anything about what the changes are? No, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I trust that yet. I'm a little nervous because the other day, my friend who's on a different program is told that, well, you know, we're going to cut your funding because we just don't think you need this much help. I mean, that's pretty succinct, but, you know, that was delivered to her in a letter. But, you know, I mean, people with disabilities that are doing self-directed, I mean, we have the ability to, you know, really know what we need, and we know how to figure that out. And when I don't have what I need, I can ask other people. I mean, I can always go elsewhere. I could go to the ADRC here in Madison and ask for some service support, maybe ask for a reference or a referral to some other agency.
I see. And the proposed changes would keep you from being allowed to do that. Let me ask you, Michael and Janet, and we're running short on time, unfortunately. We want to take one more phone call. The people who are being affected by this, there must be a lot of concern right now from people like Karen who have a source to keep her independent. And we've heard from some of the callers. Have you heard from people you're serving? And what kind of concern is there out there?
Well, I'm sure Janet can speak to this as well, but I'm getting calls from all over.
Are you?
People that are really scared and just wondering what this means. I mentioned the area in the Northeast where they're trying to roll out the program. I mean, as a company, as a managed care organization, how do you hire people? You're asking folks to sign up for a program that might not be around. And because of all the uncertainty, that there's really so much angst out there. You know, there's a system that has the members, but there's providers and businesses that are mm-hmm. involved too. The managed care organizations have over 7,000 contracts with providers.
Goodness.
They're asking a lot of questions too, what this means for them.
Right.
And the people that they serve.
Right. There aren't any answers. Let's go to just a couple Facebook comments and respond quickly. Charlene writes, it shows just how much disdain some politicians have for the common person who struggles each day in some way. There's no excuse for this kind of change in support for the people who can't care for themselves. Anne writes, these proposed budget changes seem very short-sighted and poorly thought out. It's shameful to have not worked with the current agencies and to go after the most vulnerable, many of whom aren't physically able to get out to defend their needs. Janet, your response.
My response is she's absolutely right, and it's that lack of accountability and transparency that has people concerned. And when they ask, what is the plan, and we say there is no plan, we're told there is no vision yet, it's being developed as we go, they say, how can that be? How can we be proposing such large changes, largest changes we've seen in over 20 years and not have a plan? And that's the answer we're receiving.
Thank you both very much for being with us. Karen, we'll talk much longer at a date down the road. Thank you so much for being with us and alerting us to the issue. Our thanks to Michael Blumenfeld, spokesperson for the Wisconsin Family Care Association, Janet Zander, advocacy and public policy coordinator at the Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources, and Karen Foxgrover, Madison, Wisconsin resident born with muscular dystrophy, who is managing her care with a different program, not family care, but related, so that she is given some funds to help her live very independently. And we did have a request in, as we said at the top of the show, to the secretary of the Department of Health, and we're told that she had a conflict and was unable to do the show. So we'll be on the story again, I reckon. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour. Thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. News is coming up, and hour number two, the fascinating story of Alan Turing.